Welcome to the CenturyLink Labs podcast with your host, Lucas Carlson. From Docker and Linux containers to programming languages and web frameworks, we interview technology and thought leaders around the world every week. This week's interview is brought to you by CenturyLink Cloud, the world's fastest self-service enterprise-grade cloud.
Hello, this is Lucas Carlson from the CenturyLink Labs podcast. This week, we have a returning guest. It's our first returning guest. Very excited to have him, Gabriel Monroy. Now, you might remember Gabriel because he was in one of our absolute first episodes, and he told us about the Deus project. And at that time, the Deus project was still young. And it wasn't even production ready. It wasn't 1.0. We've got him back on because recently they have announced that they actually have now gone 1.0. They are now officially Deus is available 1.0. Anybody can go out. And I wanted to get him back on the show to tell us what that means. Tell us what 1.0 for Deus means. If you don't remember the Deus show, Deus is a platform as a service that uses Docker. And so it makes Docker application development very easy to use and very familiar. If you know something like Heroku, it's very similar to a Heroku-like system. So let's have Gabriel tell us. So Gabriel, welcome back, first of all. How's it been?
Thanks, Lucas. Thanks for having me back. Things have been great. The reception to 1.0 has been fantastic, and yeah, we're really excited to kind of take on the next step in the evolution of the project.
So tell people who aren't familiar with Deus yet, what is Deus?
So Deus is I like to use the term application platform, but it's more widely known as platform as a service. And the best way to think about Deus is as a private Heroku. It's a Heroku that you set up on your own gear. You can run it on bare metal, on your workstation, or a range of public clouds.
Great. What has changed since going 1.0? What's the biggest kind of difference?
Well, there's really a few things. I was actually speaking with someone recently who made the point about 1.0 that I liked, which was you wave the 1.0 flag when you run out of reasons as to why you shouldn't, right? And for us, you know, we've had the project out there being used in production by a number of companies for a long while. We had APIs that were stable. The stability of the project has sort of proven itself out, and we were starting to run out of reasons as to why we shouldn't call it 1.0. So we really spent some time to put in the last changes to the public facing APIs that we wanted to get in there to make sure we were kind of future proofing the 1.0 API. And once that was out there, we went ahead and cut that, and it's been exciting ever since.
Awesome. What are some of the kind of feature functionalities in 1.0 that a developer gets access to?
So one of the best ways to think about Deus is, besides being a private Heroku, is that there's a lot of churn that's happening right now in the container ecosystem. And one of the things that Deus provides, really the main thing that it provides, is a workflow for software teams who are looking to adopt this stuff that is stable, that isn't going to change. So yes, there is a Git push component to this typically that mimics what you're going to get from Heroku. There's also the ability to suck in native Docker images and deploy those Docker images using our Deus pull functionality. And that workflow, along with the ability to scale containers, the ability to view aggregated logs, manage runtime configuration, collaborate with the team, and all those sort of things, we've really just hardened and solidified the core feature set that's proving to work at the software teams that have Deus deployed today.
Makes a lot of sense. What about the back-end database systems? What do you do for persistence with Deus in 1.0?
So that's a great question. One of the things that we put a lot of effort into. So first of all, taking a step back, persistence, as most of us in the space know, is one of the hardest. The stateful problem is one of the hardest problems in kind of the distributed systems game. And though we still recommend that the type of applications that you deploy on Deus are stateless, following the Heroku and 12-factor model, Deus itself has to store state, and we needed to solve that in a way that was resilient to host failures for production. 1.0 release. And so the way that we did that was we actually containerized Ceph, the distributed database. And that's actually quite interesting because Ceph provides a number of different...
How do you spell that?
C-E-P-H. And it's a very interesting project. And you know, one of the things that that was attractive to us about Ceph is that it provides three different access modes. So it provides a sort of a blob store API along the lines of S3 or Swift, which was useful to us for integrating the Docker registry that we ship. That is sort of part of the platform. There's also a block store API, which allows you to mount block devices that are actually backed by the distributed Ceph database. And then there's also a true like file system called CephFS. And support for CephFS landed in the 3.17 kernel and CoreOS included it very recently. And that's important for us. Our log aggregation system actually has concurrent readers and writers. And that was a pretty important point. So we have our Postgres database, the log aggregation system, the Docker registry, all using this highly available Ceph containerized deployment of Ceph as part of the platform control plane. Another thing that's sort of interesting along those lines, we actually have some users who are using our containerized version of Ceph outside of Deis. So if you're interested in potentially rolling your own Ceph cluster and want to do it inside of Docker containers, you should take a look at the Deis store containers. And there's a blog post by a fellow named Ian Blanke, who's an active member of the Deis community, and he's shown how you can use Ceph the Ceph that we created outside of Deis.
Very cool. And so how is something like Ceph different than something like an etcd key value store?
So an etcd key value store is really based around the RAF protocol, and it's to achieve consensus around a distributed system. Etcd is not really designed to store large amounts of data, the likes of which you would use something like Ceph for. So similar to ZooKeeper, you're going to write important configuration bits, important bits that are going to drive a service discovery system, but you're not going to be writing massive amounts of data. It's, the quorum is too expensive and the replication costs are too expensive.
And do you think that Docker, since we've last talked, is more mature and more ready to run in a production environment?
Yeah, I think so. I think the way that I like to judge that is by taking a look at the past release notes. And if you look at some of the stuff that Docker's been working on, there hasn't been a whole ton of really disruptive churn in the project, maybe with the exception of a few security related changes that have gone in recently. So I think Docker as a whole has proven, at least that the container engine portion of Docker, Docker is expanding beyond that, but the container engine portion seems to be definitely suitable for production.
Can you comment on some of the recent things that have happened around CoreOS? And Deis uses CoreOS, and Panamax from CenturyLink uses CoreOS. Can you comment on what your take is on some of the recent announcements around Rocket and CoreOS?
Yeah, for sure. So it's interesting times in this ecosystem, and I think on the one hand, we were kind of caught in the middle of this, right? We use CoreOS, as you mentioned. We use Docker heavily, as you mentioned. We have relationships with the engineering teams. We also have relationships on the business side with both companies. So it's sort of interesting for us. I definitely see the idea of competing technologies on the container engine front as being a good thing. Overall, I think competition is good. Yet at the same time, I think that a lot of this stuff is still relatively mature. So it's difficult to kind of predict where things are going to shake out. So we're definitely interested in the ACI spec and interested in contributing to that, as are others in the space. But I think for the foreseeable future, we're going to be using Docker, especially now that we're 1.0 with a Docker container engine.
What do you think about the Docker orchestration stuff coming out and the clustering technology?
Yeah, I definitely think it's interesting, and I think Docker certainly has earned the right to do what they want as a company. I personally am very interested in what I like to refer to as layered architecture. I tweeted something out recently that got a decent amount of play, which was a diagram that kind of outlines the strata of the container ecosystem. And really, if you look at the container engine, it's but one small portion of the strata. And I see no reason why companies can't kind of play at different points of the ecosystem, as long as the lines between what is scheduling versus what is orchestration versus what is the container engine. As long as those lines are well defined architecturally, that's really what I'm most interested in.
Cool. And so now that Deus is 1.0, what does a regular developer need to do to get it up and running? Is it something that's easy to run on a cloud environment?
Absolutely, and this is, I think, one of the key differentiators of Deus. We have a lot of folks who ask us, what are the differences between Deus and Cloud Foundry, for example? And the main thing that I try to express is, besides the fact that we were architected after Docker, which is kind of like a soft sort of answer to that, Deus is, I like to think, an order of magnitude easier to install and easier to operate. All you really need to get Deus running is an existing cluster of CoreOS machines. We've just recently moved to the CoreOS stable channel, and so anything on stable or any later release should suffice just fine. And then there's really just three commands that you need to run. There's a command line utility called deusctl that is used for operational the side of this. So deusctl install platform, deusctl start platform, and you're up and running. And it's it takes a few minutes to download some Docker images, but that's about it.
And do you run those same commands on every node in your CoreOS cluster?
No, actually, the deusctl command you can run it on nodes in the cluster, but really it's designed as kind of a tool to run on your workstation that operates across a cluster of CoreOS machines. So another way of thinking it at a lower level is deusctl is really wrapping the Fleet and etcd APIs. So Deus is scheduling the platform control plane and routing mesh via the Fleet APIs. It's performing configuration functions via the etcd APIs, and you can do that from your workstation over an SSH tunnel to one of the nodes in the CoreOS cluster, and that those changes will then replicate across the other nodes.
Very cool. Where would somebody go to get started? Is there an easy way to get started with Deus?
Yes. So if you go to deus.io, you can find our documentation. Now, one of the things I'm really proud of with our project is we've done, I think, a really great job fleshing out the documentation, making sure that it stays updated as the project evolves. We don't accept pull requests that don't have documentation and the like. So you can find, go to installing Deus section of our website, find a quick start guide, find guides for specific platforms, EC2, DigitalOcean, Google Compute, Bare Metal, and the like, and just kind of walk you through getting it up and running. And if you look at sort of the on Twitter and inside of the GitHub, you'll see lots of companies have been able to stand up Deus quite easily and are quite happy with the process.
Very cool. And there's also been a recent announcement about a partnership with you and the Doku guy, Jeff Lindsay. What can you tell us more about that?
Yeah, so that's really fun for us. So a little bit of background, Deus has evolved from being kind of a platform that could support a single host configuration to a platform that is highly available by default. So we actually don't ship. Deus has a minimum of three nodes, and that was kind of new. That was before we announced 1.0. And as part of the lead up to that, I know we had a number of folks who were using Deus on single nodes. So to try and provide a better answer for those folks who really wanted these small setups, Jeff and I are friends and we talk regularly, and it turned out that Doku was looking for sponsorship. So we thought it was a great opportunity for us to give back to the open source community in the form of Doku, but also to try and tie the two projects together a little more closely so that folks who are using Doku, when they outgrow it, they can keep the same workflow or a similar workflow and know that their applications will work on Doku and as well as on Deus when they start to need to achieve scale. So I'm really excited about it. I'm always excited to work with Jeff. Jeff is always churning out great things. But I'm definitely excited about some of the stuff we can do it's around standardizing around build packs and Docker integration, example applications and test suites that can kind of prove out, if problems are in build packs or in some of the build infrastructure. And over time, actually, the goal is to share the build stage of Doku and Deus, and maybe other projects like Flame down the road.
What do you think about build packs versus using the standard containers, the canonical containers from Docker, the ones that have Ruby or PHP in them, and using the on-build functionality of Docker files instead of using a build pack?
I love it. I think that there's a lot of benefits. The biggest one is that you can really shrink the image sizes pretty significantly. The Heroku Cedar stack, which is kind of the requirement for using build pack based deploys, is one of the main reasons that it takes about 30 minutes to provision a Deus cluster, because we've got to download that and sort of prep it. If that can be eliminated from the process, it can be could be great. Moreover, I think just the general idea of it is pretty exciting to me. However, we're interested in shipping stuff that works for teams today, and build packs are proven and reliable and are very comfortable for folks migrating off Heroku. And we do a lot of companies who have been successful on Heroku but need to move to Metal or to their own EC2 instances, for example. We want to offer them a great migration story.
What happens if you try to set up Deus and you don't have three nodes in your CoreOS cluster?
That's an interesting question. We should probably fail fast and let you know right up front. I'm not sure that we do today. I believe what might happen is, I think maybe the Ceph store won't actually come up. That's a good point. Right now, we warn you as much as we can throughout the documentation, and the idea is that you should have followed those warnings. But those of us who work in the space know that though we may write the documentation, it may not be read.
And so with Deus, if you add a node to your CoreOS cluster and register it into that CD, will Deus automatically take advantage of the new infrastructure that's coming up?
Yes, absolutely, and that's really a function of kind of the scheduler and the scheduler recognizing that the new host is part of the cluster. So, absolutely, and really going forward, for some of these larger deploys that we're working on, there's, if you look at the Deus architecture diagrams, there's kind of the control plane of Deus and then the data plane of Deus. And the control plane is designed to be, 3 to 5 hosts where you're really maintaining kind of the RAF quorum and that sort of thing, and the platform control components like the Ceph cluster and that sort of thing reside there. And then the data plane is designed to be kept really lightweight, so as minimal set of components, minimal memory requirements, and that's where you run the containers that are going to power the applications for your team. So we see those two as kind of distinct, and the idea is that you'd set up a more or less static control plane, barring host failures and things like that, and then you really achieve scale and add and remove hosts on the data plane side of the equation.
Got it. And then can you tell us about some of the biggest Deus clusters that you've seen? How large has this been tested to scale?
That's a great question. It's difficult for us to know. We're working with customers, well above the 20 host point at this point. We're also working very closely with the folks at Mesosphere on achieving scale that is on the order of thousands of nodes. And really for us, we are a scheduling consumer, so there's not really much besides the scheduler itself that's going to affect how large the platform can scale. So we're really excited to work with the folks in Mesosphere. We actually have an alpha of this right now that we're testing that uses the Marathon APIs from Mesos. But it's pretty exciting to us. I think pretty soon you're going to see some posts from us about Deus clusters that are over 1,000 nodes.
And so is the current scheduler default, is the default scheduler Fleet?
Correct. The default scheduler is Fleet. Now, I actually gave a talk at QCon recently on cluster schedulers, and specifically cluster schedulers as they relate to Docker. One of the interesting things about cluster schedulers is that most of them are designed to do their own process isolation. And one of the tricks with Docker is that Docker is also designed to do process isolation. So what you have is you have cluster schedulers and Docker sort of fighting over who gets to control the C groups for the platform. And that's a tricky place. So there's actually only a few schedulers out there that support Docker controlling the C groups. Mesos is one of them. But as you can see by sort of their support for Rocket and some other things, they're also interested in kind of doing their own process isolation. So that's kind of interesting, because we're based on CoreOS, Fleet was kind of free, right? We shipped with Fleet, we used Fleet to schedule the control plane, so it was an easy choice. It's sort of a zero config default that allows you to schedule with Fleet. Over time, as we achieve scale, we think other scheduling solutions like Mesos are going to prove better.
Got it. What about the base operating system? Have you been looking into options outside of CoreOS? Is Atomic on the roadmap?
Atomic's not on the roadmap. We're really still, really focused on making CoreOS work well. We work very, very closely with the team over there, and I think they're doing great things. And I really, we're really interested in getting users who are not super concerned about what the underlying operating system is. If you're deeply concerned about that and you want to be tinkering at that level, Deus may not be right for you, and that's perfectly okay, and not every project is a fit for every team. So, does that mean that we're going to be CoreOS forever? No, absolutely not. We certainly reserve our right to choose some other operating systems down the line, but. It brings up an interesting question, because one of the things that I really love to see kind of shake out in the ecosystem is, I have this diagram that I think I mentioned before about the strata of the container ecosystem, and really where we're sitting with Deus, and I would argue Panamax also, is kind of at the top at this workflow layer, which is kind of what are you exposing to the end software team? And really below that, I see kind of an orchestration layer, along the lines of something like Kubernetes. And below that, a scheduling layer, which is doing placement across a distributed system. And below that, you have the scheduling layer talking to a container engine, which could be Rocket or Docker and so on and so forth. And then below that, you have an operating system. Now, of course, these lines can be blurred, and there's a lot of mix. So it's not 100% clear. But what I would love as sort of someone who's building tools in the space is to kind of have some well-defined boundaries between these layers along the lines of the OSI model. So one of the reasons that the OSI model is so great, and for those of you who aren't familiar, OSI model defines kind of the networking layers for the networking stack. And the real beauty is that if you're building a solution on layer 4, layer 3 of the networking stack, for IP connectivity, you don't actually have to worry about, all you have to worry about is the layer beneath you. Right, and you don't have to worry about anything below that. So, as a platform builder, I love nothing more than to just have to, build my workflow layer, worry about an integration to Kubernetes or something that exposes similar APIs, and then not have to worry all the way down the rest of the stack about the container engine and what the scheduling system looks like and all that. But with a relatively immature ecosystem like this, the truth is that we're not there yet, and these strata are still going to take some time to solidify.
Got it. What's next for Deus?
Yeah, that's really exciting. So there's a couple things that I can share, and there's some other stuff that I can't share, but all of it very exciting. So, the things that I can share are, if you follow the project, these won't be big surprises, but, we're definitely interested in, as I mentioned, shipping a production-ready Mesos integration to allow folks who need to achieve scale to do so. We're also very interested in providing a service gateway implementation that will allow for explicit service attachments. One of the things that Deus is used for, in the field is microservice architectures, and having explicit attachments between different services that are backed by authorization and access controls and that can be audited and that sort of thing, and is incredibly important, as opposed to some of the sort of implicit service discovery based attachment systems that you'll find a lot of work on in the Docker ecosystem today. So that's another thing we're definitely interested in. you know, beyond that, you know, there's lots of interesting proposals. One that I'll mention, we had a community member actually write up a whole pull request to implement SSL support at the per application level. So each deployed application can actually ship its own certificate and private key, which will integrate with the custom domains that are added and allow users to granularly control SSL at a per app level, which is really exciting to me because it's a feature that we've wanted for a long time, but one that we haven't had the resources to build. And someone from the community came along and shipped it for us. So we're excited and we hope to ship that in the next release. So we're excited. And then, like I said, there's some other stuff we can't talk about as to the future of the project, but I'm really excited about that stuff.
Where can people learn more?
Folks can learn more by checking out our blog. That's deus.io/blog. You can also follow myself on Twitter at GabberTV, GABRTV, or you can follow OpenDeus on Twitter.
Excellent. Well, it's been great to have you on and great to get an update on the project. It seems like a lot more maturity, a lot more scale. It seems much more robust and seems like you guys are definitely on a good trajectory. Thanks for coming on and keep us updated as things progress.
Thanks so much, Lucas.
Thanks for listening to the CenturyLink Labs podcast with Lucas Carlson. If you like what you just heard, we hope you'll pass along our web address, CenturyLinkLabs.com, to your friends and colleagues. Be sure to check out our archive section on our website for previous podcasts. This has been a CenturyLink production. Join us next time for another edition of the CenturyLink Labs podcast.